With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Monday's edition of Off the Hook Sports. It is April the 22nd. That is right. You are looking at Caleb Calhoun and John Adams. I got John for the whole show today. Dave is still on vacation and he will be back tomorrow. Apologies for no show on Friday. We will be back and rolling this week, though, for the NFL draft. The Diamond Vols are ranked number one, which should be ranked number one after beating 2 out of 3 against Kentucky. But also, we got a monster show to talk about today. We've got the Tennessee Lady Vols adding a Syracuse transfer. Rick Barnes made some interesting comments last week about players transferring out, and Tennessee basketball added another recruit. Arch Manning is the story of the spring of spring practice for college football after lighting it up in Texas's spring game. Should Tennessee try to upgrade its roster, even at position units of strength in the transfer portal? FedEx pledges an NIL partnership with Memphis. Will that affect Tennessee, and should Tennessee go the same route? And also, NCAA new rules coming. We're going to talk about that. John Adams, how are you doing?
Doing well, Caleb. Thank you.
Did you enjoy 420 on Saturday? Genuine question. Okay. We're going to go ahead and dive in. John, thanks again for doing this whole show with me. But we're going to start with the Tennessee Lady Vols. They have added Syracuse transfer Alyssa Latham. She was a freshman this past year, and she is a forward. Appeared in all 32 games, started 26 of them. You talked last week about how if they're going to make any sort of run, they really need to upgrade their roster. What are your thoughts about Alyssa Latham committing to the Tennessee Lady Vols?
Well, I think it's significant. There's no question that new coach Kim Caldwell has to drastically revamp her roster. She plays a different style of game than for which this roster was recruited. So, yeah, I'm not an expert on Syracuse women's basketball. I didn't watch it at all this year. But I've seen it in the past, and it usually played up tempo. I noticed Syracuse averaged like 75 point something per game. So I assume they're playing a fairly fast tempo. I don't think she would have added somebody that was especially sluggish running up and down the court. So I used to think it was significant when you signed a transfer with a number of years left, not just a one and done graduate student. But now with the new NCAA rules that you can transfer an unlimited amount of time, I don't think that makes as much difference. It's a year-by-year basis. But she's a 6'2 player, so she had decent stats at Syracuse, so should fit in well with the Lady Vols. She still needs to add some other players, I think.
Yeah, I think this actually happened. And I don't think it was a coincidence. This happened the same weekend Caroline Stripling entered the transfer portal. And I think you mentioned her specifically as was not going to be a fit for what Kim Caldwell wants to do.
No, and I'm sure she'll land somewhere else and fit into a style of play that's more conducive to her skill set. I mean, she was a contributor in the old system, but I just don't think she fit this one. I was curious about Tess Darby is staying. She's not especially quick, but she is a really good three-point shooter. Be interested to see how, if you want to play an up-tempo game and shoot a lot of threes, okay, you need players that can really run, and you also need players that can shoot threes. So sometimes you may lean on one skill more than the other in balancing out your lineup. But you know how it works when a fast break transition type team, a lot of times it sets you up for open threes. And so maybe Darby believes she can work in this system. And I'm sure Kim Caldwell had a one-on-one talk with all the players. And she said, she told Tess Darby, hey, you'll fit what I'm trying to do. We can use you. And so she's staying.
Well, one of the comparisons of that, it's funny you bring that up. I'm just thinking in my head, you know, when Bruce Pearl took over at Tennessee, I mean, Chris Lofton wasn't that athletic. He wasn't that quick, but everybody else around him was able to turn up the tempo, which allowed Chris Lofton so many open shots at three. So do you see similarity there?
Yeah, I you're right about that. So I think you need a mix. But remember, Chris Lofton got it. When that team was at its best, it was in transition, and Chris Lofton would be getting open threes before the defense was even set. I go back, one of his Bruce Pearl's mentors, he was an assistant coach under Dr. Tom Davis, and I remember when he played, he had some Boston College teams. I'm going back many, many years here. And he had Boston College teams, and they pressed a lot. And some of those guys just didn't look like they could play in a pressing style game, but they fit what he was doing. It's not all about speed and quickness. It's also about knowing where you need to be and reacting in the right way to what's happening. So I'll be curious to see what kind of lineup she assembles.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting that she got Alyssa Latham, because you're right. Alyssa Latham is not a great three-point shooter, but she is 6'2", and you would assume she's athletic. And her problem at Marshall, I mean, this wasn't necessarily a problem because she won that league and went to the NCAA tournament, but they got bounced out so early because I don't think she had one player over 5'9 on that team. And so to get Alyssa Latham already shows, to the question you asked a couple of weeks ago that she had the short response to, I think she is very aware that she has to go for more size at Tennessee to run this style.
Yeah, and see, again, the women's game is getting so much bigger in terms of not just popularity, but in sheer size. South Carolina has 6'7" post player, of course, this year, and won a national championship. To combat teams like that, if you're going to LSU tallest starter was 6'3", Angel Reese, but a great instinctive rebounder, good defender, very quick. So you can combat that in a way, but you know, if you have an overall lack of height, I think it will be, you know, difficult. One of the things I'm also most curious about with her new system is she played a lot of people. She substituted a lot. And we talked more about, and people have asked more about up-tempo, shooting threes, exciting, entertaining basketball. But if you're also going to play a lot of people, then recruiting becomes even more paramount, because when you interchange players, you want somebody just as good. You know, some of the best teams now, South Carolina is a great exception, and they play 9 people regularly, just rotate them. They're so talented. But LSU basically a seven-man team. And Gino Auriemma didn't have any choice because of injuries at Connecticut. He made the Final Four, again, with basically a 7 players getting virtually all of the significant minutes.
I wanted to ask you about that depth. Well, not necessarily the depth, but I agree about the depth, because, but to your point on that, Bruce Pearl, another comparison, his deepest team at Tennessee was the one that went to the Elite Eight. Remember that team that lost Tyler Smith and lost four scholarship players and beat Kansas? Yeah. And so I could see that working, but so it could be interesting how that plays out. I do want to ask you about just genuine style of play, because we did have Jimmy Hyams on last weekend and last Thursday, and I think we're all energetic about Danny White hiring an exciting brand of basketball for Kim Caldwell, particularly after what Tennessee Lady Vols fans have had to labor through the past few years. However, does up-tempo basketball, while it may win games and create entertainment, does it really win championships, or does the South Carolina style, is that the style that still needs to win championships? Do you need to, I guess, does the defensive rebounding still win championships, provided you recruit the talent to do it?
Well, since you bring up South Carolina, there's no style of play South Carolina couldn't implement. It could play up-tempo with anybody, a lot of quick guard shoot threes. But you did notice with South Carolina, in those rare instances where it had some difficulty, so many times it was basically unopposed on the court. But when you did, when it did struggle a little bit, what did it do? It started going inside to Cardoza, just as it did years for 4 years with Aaliyah Boston. It went through the post. So ideally, you look at Connecticut in the men's game. I mean, is there really any style Connecticut couldn't have played? Good post players, it can go through them, but I mean, those guys shoot perimeter. They were athletic, so they had such a nice mixture. So I think to start off with, I think this is a good way to go. And I don't, when you talk about who do you have, whom do you have to beat in the SEC in women's basketball, you have to beat South Carolina, LSU. Each has won a championship in the last 2 years. Then Texas coming into the league. It's going to be good all the time. Has a great coach. Recruiting in Texas for women's basketball is terrific. So it will always be good. Those three teams. And are you going to beat them with just sheer talent? I don't think so. I think you have to do something a little unorthodox. And I don't know if you can win a championship with this style of play. Maybe you can. I'm sure Kim Caldwell believes you can, or she wouldn't be using this, because she's here to win championships, and this is her style of play. So did Jimmy say he didn't think you could win championships with this style?
No, he didn't say that. He we actually had a pretty good conversation on it. He said that if you are trying to build something, this is a good style to go with. But, you know, once you have the talent, you know, the more traditional way to he leans towards.
Yeah, we'll look at Bruce Pearl, Caleb. When he was started out at Tennessee, he didn't recruit that group of players, and he played that style. And then as he stayed here longer and had access to higher-rated recruits, he went after them. And the style changed, the team slowed down, and it wasn't as entertaining.
It wasn't.
I mean, when I think about the Bruce Pearl era and what I remember of it, the best moments were launching those threes and moving in transition, and not just Chris Lofton, but Jawan Smith and interesting players like Dane Bradshaw, who played good defensively and maybe limited in talent, but fit into the Bruce Pearl system, and just a fast moving, scrappy team. Could he have won a championship that way? Who knows? It didn't happen, but, you know, he had Ohio State down by about 18 or 20 points in a Sweet 16 game. Couldn't hold the lead, but that was a very talented team, Final Four bound, and he played it off its feet for a good part of the game.
Yeah, this is kind of a concern, though, that we've shared about Danny White's hires in general, and that they're successful with the fun brand, but can they be championship caliber? Because, you know, the same goes for Josh Heupel, runs a very high-flying, exciting offense in football, but you question if that can win a championship. And, you know, John, I want to bring this up. I've brought this up before, but Josh Heupel draws comparisons to Steve Spurrier with his Spurrier's front and gun, but as you know, Spurrier only got one national title, and he backed into that national title. That was a that was the most backhanded national title anybody's ever won.
Well, LSU's was backhanded too in 2007. Things That's had true. To go crazy with two losses. But the thing about Spurrier, though, he was coaching at Florida really at the wrong time, because Florida State and Miami were really good during that era too. And he played, you know, he had to get past him, and Nebraska was a dynasty. He had really tough competition when it came to winning it all. And the other thing about Spurrier, if you look at the defensive talent he recruited, it's almost as though he recruited more talented defensive players than he did offense. When I think back to some of those players that he had, like Alex Brown, pretty much beat Tennessee single-handed one time, always good defensive backs. I think that's kind of the model for Josh Heupel, is to have a really good offense, but then be able to recruit talented defenses. And yeah, you'll win some high-scoring games, but you'll have defense that can make decisive game-turning plays. But we still don't know, and I wrote a column about this a few weeks ago. I think this season will tell us what the ceiling is with Josh Heupel. Is he's got an elite quarterback, Nico Iamaleava. Nobody doubts that. And he's got a pretty a veteran offensive line, Dylan Sampson, proven running back, solid in the receiving core. What can he do with this? He needs to be able to make a playoff with this team. If he doesn't, then it makes me think maybe he's more a 9-3, 10-2 guy, might make the playoff, but not a championship. A championship might not be forthcoming. And it's, I'm not saying it's make or break year, but I think it will give us a little insight into where the program could go.
Totally agree. I think I have a lot of high expectations on Josh Heupel this year, for a lot of different reasons.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We're going to talk about Josh Heupel and Tennessee football also later in the show, guys. But let's first move on to the other side of the hardwood to talk men's basketball. Tennessee picked up a 2025 recruit over the weekend, Dwayne Brown II, who is a 3-4-star power forward. But before that, last week, Rick Barnes called a press conference. And John, I don't know if you watched it, but he seemed to basically imply that players transfer. He didn't say this directly, guys, so I'm not directly quoting him. But he gave off the vibe between him and Jemiah Meshack that players transferring out were transferring because they were a little bit soft or impatient. And he directly said, you know, that he did not expect Jonas Adu to transfer. And what do you make of that? Do you think Rick Barnes finds what Adu and Awaka did to be, I guess the only word is mentally weak?
No, I looked at it more from the idea of impatience. I didn't get that he was implying that. I looked at it more just that maybe they were impatient, and you could say that all players are impatient now. There's no doubt that players who fare well under Rick Barnes' system respond well to hard coaching. Meshack is an example of that. Dalton Kinnick came to Tennessee for that very reason. He wanted to be coached hard. He wanted to be coached hard on defense, and Rick Barnes really does that. So I didn't look at that in that light. I don't know that he was surprised at that surprised at Adu transferring. I think he was more surprised at Awaka transferring, entering the portal at least. But I think he may still take Awaka back. I still think there's a chance Awaka would be on the team. For a veteran coach, which Barnes obviously is, who's been coaching the game for so many years, so many decades, I think he handles this era pretty well. He doesn't seem to be too frustrated by it. You can't fight it. You got to roll with it. And the mere fact that he could get Dalton Kinnick and completely change his offensive potential, that was significant. I really think he's going to build another strong roster through the portal.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think, and I want to know your thoughts on this, that very few coaches at Rick Barnes' age are uniquely positioned for the changing landscape of a sport. Usually the sport passes them by when they hit that age. But I think because of Rick Barnes' style, you know this, John, 21 and 22-year-olds are a lot more mature than 18-year-olds. And I think Dalton Kinnick may become kind of a trend where you see these very mature 21, 22-year-olds that, you know, they maybe have a year or two left of scholarship play. They see a potential NBA future, and they would go to Tennessee because they want to get coached hard. I think that's exactly why that Darling Stone Dubar kid committed to Tennessee. I think he saw Dalton Kinnick, and I think he committed because he wants to get coached hard by Rick Barnes. And it's kind of the opposite of those one and done players that Rick Barnes used to recruit. They don't want to get coached hard. That's a pit stop for the NBA.
Well, I think too, Caleb, when you talk about, you know how extraordinarily difficult it is to make the NBA. You're competing for roster spots with players from all over the world. I mean, there are all college All-Americans, first team All-Americans that can't make it in the NBA. So when you get to that stage, when you're maybe a step or two removed from the NBA and you're looking at your career and you're thinking and you're getting feedback, here's what I don't do well. A lot of times the NBA will take a guy that's really good at one thing. But if you're not like at the most elite level at one thing, then you need to be able to do different things so you can fit in with different styles of play in the NBA, fit in a different roster. And so you're looking for an extra edge, just like you said. And so maybe that edge is they got to get better on defense. Maybe they feel like they need somebody to push them, and Rick Barnes will push them. So you're right. I think Dalton Kinnick, you put him on a billboard with the headline, "Come join us." He did.
I agree. That's a great idea. And you're right. The Dalton Kinnicks of the world, the hard part, and I know that, you know, basketball is the second most played sport in the world, only to soccer. But the highest level of basketball has the fewest roster spots of any professional league in the world. So it is, and it's really hard for players to accept. And I know this much, where basketball, more than any other sport, all the way up through college, you're usually the big man on campus and the best player on your team. And I think they lose sight of the fact that, and I think Dalton Kinnick gets this, and I think this new transfer, Donald Stone Dubar, gets this. You get developed well, you can make generational money as a role player in the NBA. You know, that's the best job in the world, a role player in the NBA. I mean, you're not working that hard and you're walking home with $100 million at the end of the day.
Put in your 15 minutes a game. Do what you do well. you can stick around a long time in that league, but you're right. Getting there is really challenging. I mean, when you look at the players that come over to the NBA from Europe, I mean, it's gotta be shocking to a lot of college players who, as you said, are like, they can be starring in a Final Four and they can be an All-American and then come out, you're really not first-round material. I mean, because they're taking guys from Europe.
Yeah, so. Exactly. And it's very difficult. And I wonder, do you think from another layer, do you think something like what Jonas Adu did, do you think that was very short-sighted, him leaving? I thought it was.
Maybe, but Jonas Adu improved last year, I thought. And I think his problems were accentuated when he went against elite big men. I mean, he's pretty good against most people. I mean, I think it's not like it's, I don't want to minimize his loss because he did some really good things. And I wonder too, do you think players think this way? And it's hard for me to imagine because everybody that plays college sports, not everybody, but a lot of them think I'm going to end up playing pro ball. I'm that good. And they can find rationalize why they aren't doing more in college, but ultimately they think they're going to be pro players. Do you think anybody looks at it like, well, I don't know if I can make it in the NBA. So I better make as much money as I can off my game in college. The NIL enables players to do that. So I don't know what Jonas Adu might get elsewhere. And maybe Tennessee looked at him as, we've got an NIL budget here. We'd like to keep him, but we want to keep him at this amount. We don't want to keep him up here. So I don't know if that was a factor. But I think it is a number of times now.
Oh, I think it is. I think that was a big part of it. But I also think that, and I understand, I'm not a college athlete. It's difficult. That's a calculation that nobody before us had to make that's a college athlete. I would still say it was the wrong calculation by Adu because he was athletic. He's 6'10", 6'11". He developed under Barnes. He was going to get to the level to where he probably could have been one of those NBA role players that puts in his 15 minutes. And that is worth so much more money than you can make in the NIL market in college basketball. And so I think it was a bit of a short-sighted decision.
That may never have crossed his mind. I mean, with his height, I'm sure he thinks he's going to play in the NBA. And maybe he got tired of criticism. Here. I don't know. I mean, players should stay off social media.
They should.
I mean, you're going to get vilified by social media anytime you fail. So there's no future in it.
Yeah. And it's, I think you and I, we all saw how he got mentally taken out of that game against Purdue. He backed down with Zach Edey and got nervous. And if he can't handle social media criticism from that, the other thing the NBA does very well, for big men in particular, they throw cheap shots underneath the basket all the time on big men because they want to see how you're going to react to it. And if Adu couldn't handle Zach Edey or social media, he can't handle the NBA as a big man.
No, and I think I could see where going against Zach Edey could be daunting because he's not 6'11", he's 7'4". So all of a sudden you're looking up at your post counterpart. And I think that has maybe you need to play against him three or four times. Maybe you'd get better at it. On the other hand, maybe you would just get so psyched out. You think, oh my God, I can't play against this guy. He's going to dunk me in the basket. So yeah, I hope the guy finds a good fit for himself and he may very well do that in college.
Yeah. Yeah, he could. So would you rather have him back or Toby Awaka if you had a choice in your Tennessee?
I think I'd rather still have Adu. Because
really?
Toby Awaka, yeah, because I haven't seen much of an offensive game from him. He plays hard. He's strong physically. He's foul prone. So those are all those. He's got to be able to stay on the floor. If I want somebody that can play 32 minutes a game, how could you count on Awaka for 32 minutes of playing time? Now, maybe he can, as he matures and gets more experience, maybe he can do that. But his offensive game's pretty limited right now. You know, if you
that's where Rick Barnes' development comes in, though.
Well, that's true. He's done that with other players. So maybe I think Tennessee would probably rather have Awaka. I really do.
In 60 seconds, we're going to stick with Tennessee basketball. We're going to talk about what they should do with their NIL money because they have a good bit of it. And we're going to talk with John just about that. The show brought to you by Banks and Jones.
Well, it's because they're Tennessee's trial attorney. You can play to win with Banks and Jones because they'll go to trial. You've heard of other lawyers. They say they'll go to trial and fight for you. They won't. They just want to settle. That's the easiest way out. Well, that's not Banks and Jones, led by T. Scott Jones. They won't settle. They'll go to trial for you. Tennessee's trial attorney. They play to win. Truly, Tennessee's trial attorney when it comes to criminal defense or personal injury. Why settle? Banks and Jones, T. Scott Jones, banksandjones.com.
All right, John, so Tennessee picked up a wing last week. They have two bigs that have left them for the portal. One, they could get back in Toby Awaka. They also are targeting a couple of bigs, Igor Milicic Jr. You have a certain amount of NIL funds, and you can direct where that money is going to be spent. What would you spend it on if you were running Tennessee's basketball team right now?
Well, I still want shooters. I mean, I saw the impact Dalton Connect had, but I still thought Tennessee was a shooter short when it mattered most. I think when you look at Connecticut's team, and now they seem to be the example for everything, but there was no shortcoming with that team. And I think that's the model. But I still think Tennessee... I still think Tennessee comes up short with perimeter shooters. I mean, Zakai Ziegler had some good games, but he's not a consistent, outstanding shooter. You kind of need two Dalton Connects would help. Can you get two Dalton Connects in the portal? I would definitely go for that.
It would certainly help this past year had one of their spot-up shooters, Santi Vescovi, not – disappear yes. in terms yes. of shooting the ball.
Oh, yeah. See, that would be, you take Santiago Vescovi his first 2 years at Tennessee when he made all SEC. You take him, that Vescovi, pair him with Dalton Connect. Then you got two guys on the wing that can light it up. It really makes a difference because you know teams shaded their defense to Connect side the way it was set up this past season.
Oh, definitely. I think they do need to go for another big. They need to, and I don't mean like an Awaka type of big that's 6'8". I think because Rick Barnes likes to play small ball now, I think your big has to be 6'10", 6'11", if you're really going to have the impact you want. But then, yeah, I would go for shooters. And nowadays, your bigs could be shooters. It's funny. Everybody thinks that when Virginia won their national title, they thought that was proof that, no, you can win the old school, slow it down defense way. And they didn't realize that every player on that Virginia team could shoot and score if they needed to.
Yeah. And one of our listeners, Travis, pointed out moments ago that in that Purdue game, getting back to AD's performance, he missed those short jumpers, 10 to 12 foot jumpers. You make those shots against Purdue, you can win games because particularly early on, Edie did not like to contest shots. It was paramount to him to stay out of foul trouble. He was able to do that, but he didn't go out. So you've got that shot. Adu had that shot, and you got to be able to hit that shot. And he hit it at times during the season, but I think that's what led people. It fostered so much of the criticism, I think, because he couldn't make that shot when making that shot was more important than ever. And if he can't make that shot, there's no point on his being on the floor.
I agree. I talked to Dave about that a couple of weeks ago. I don't think anybody expected Adu to win the matchup with Edie, but you do what you can do to neutralize it. And part of that is part of that for AJ was make three or four of those 10 to 15 footers, and you totally change the complexion of the game at that point. And he couldn't do it. He melted down.
Yeah, and you're right. And you go back to that Virginia championship. I mean, Virginia, of course, Tony Bennett is known for his defense. But you're right. And even though it played a slower style, half-court type game, all the guys can shoot from the – when you can do that, I mean, it just has a dramatic effect on how you're defended. And particularly, it seems like, in the NCAA tournament, to me, the only way you could have beaten Connecticut was to just have a torrid three-point shooting game and maybe hope that it's off a little bit. But say Alabama had a great – Alabama still couldn't beat it, but it hung in there for quite a while and shot threes, I guess, hit about – seemed like 45 to 50% of its threes in that game. That's the way to do it. You got to find ways to counter that. And there aren't that many Zach Edey's out there, but we saw with Connecticut, it had two guys it could throw in there against Edey. And they were pretty good. Now it's gone out and gotten another – post player in light of losing one big guy. So again, we talk about assembling a team. When you talk about championships, you can't have any real weak links or shortcomings. You got to be able to play. We see it particularly in the NCAA tournament. You got to be able to play different styles and do well against different styles. And UConn did that better than anybody has the last two tournaments.
Yep. And when we're going to take a quick break. When we come back in 2 minutes, we're going to talk a little bit of Tennessee football and Arch Manning. Stick with us, guys. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Fifth year, the second and third generations continue Joe Neubert's commitment.
His vision of what this business needed to be, we still try to live up to that. If we wouldn't put our family in it, we're not going to put their family. If you're going to say that you're doing the best work in Knoxville, now saying it's one thing, producing it and providing it's another.
The largest family-owned collision center in Knoxville is Joe Neubert Collision Center.
Hi, I'm Rick Terry, and we at Rick Terry Jewelry Designs pride ourselves in the highest quality craftsmanship from a family-owned business here in Knoxville for over 35 years. At Rick Terry Jewelry Designs, we also take pride in being an affordable option for all your game day accessories, especially those fire opals. At Rick Terry Jewelry Designs, we want to be your jeweler every day and especially on game day. Go Vols!
Hi, Mike Davis here with City Heating and Air, reminding you to always dare to compare. Our team provides quality local heating and air service, installation, and maintenance across East Tennessee. We use only the best equipment like American Standard Heating and Air Conditioning for your residential, new construction, or commercial needs. Honesty, dependability, and customer satisfaction have been the cornerstones of our business since 1961. City Heat and Air.
There's your bear.
Welcome to Ray Varner Ford in Clinton, where every turn meets new possibilities and every mile celebrates cutting-edge innovation. Elevate your journey with our pre-owned selection of quality vehicles. 2021 Ford Mustang 5.0 GT, 33,540. 2021 GMC Sierra 1500 Denali 4x4, 46,980. 2022 Ford Expedition King Ranch 4x4, 67,550. Local you trust, pre-owned vehicles you can afford. Ray Varner Ford, your East Tennessee Ford dealership.
Welcome back, everybody. We got a little bit of football to talk about and a little bit of a Manning story to talk about. There is a new sheriff in college football that everybody thinks is in Texas, and his name is Arch Manning because he lit it up in the spring game over the weekend for Texas. Three touchdowns through the year, looked incredible. Obviously, Arch Manning is going to draw the interest of Tennessee for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, he's the nephew of Peyton Manning. But on a larger scale, he's going to start to be pitted against Nico Iamaleava since they were both in the same recruiting class, the top two quarterbacks, and now they're both in the SEC. So there's going to be a lot of debate over who's better over the next couple of years, even though Arch is not going to start this year. That would be Quinn Ewers. But here with John Adams, John, I wanted to ask you, what did you make of Arch Manning biting up the spring game. Is this just Texas trying to market Arch Manning for themselves? Or do you think there's validity to it?
I think there's validity to it, but I also think it's very contrived. A coach can pretty much orchestrate a spring game to make whatever point he chooses. If he wants somebody to look good, he can make them look good in the spring game simply by the way that it's set up and the play calling, whatever, and the matchups. I believe Arch Manning will be a really good quarterback. It's just hard to fathom that he wouldn't be. And so he was able to showcase his skill. I still look at it from Steve Sarkisian's standpoint. The last two things he wants to hear from Arch Manning are, see ya. He doesn't want him transferring. And I never thought, knowing the Manning family, that Arch would be quick to leave. It's not as though he needs a mega NIL deal. That's not what it's... He's not going to turn down money, don't get me wrong, but that's not his goal here. It's to get ready for the NFL. That's what his goal is in college, I think, and maybe have a good time along the way. So I think it was really good for him and probably really good for Sarkisian the way the spring game played out, but there's no denying his skill set. Quinn Ewers is a quarterback. But you need two quarterbacks. Yours got hurt last year. So you really need two quarterbacks. And when I look at it, Caleb, when I look at the elite teams in the SEC and playoff contenders, I certainly consider Texas to be one. Pretty well set, maybe better set than anybody else at quarterback in terms of depth, a 1-2 punch.
I do. I agree. And that's why I find it a little weird that I think there's a lot of PR going on with Steve Sarkisian and Arch Manning right now. Do you remember where you paid attention a couple of months ago where Arch Manning said he's going to opt out of the college football video game so he can focus on football?
Yes.
Well, that's not any extra work. You just say, yeah, here's my name and give me a check and call it a day. It's not like you're doing anything extra to be in the game. So... I mean, I don't want to go here because I do think he's smarter than the person I'm about to name, but do you not get kind of some Butch Jones vibes from Steve Sarkisian where he tries to manipulate some narratives out there just for PR purposes?
I've never thought of Steve Sarkisian at all like Butch Jones. I don't see that. And if that's the case, if he is trying to do it and they both went to the same school, then Sarkisian was the A student, Butch was the D student, and would be held back at the end of the year and take the course again. But no, I don't look at it that way. I mean, I think Steve Sarkisian is PR savvy. He knows what it's like to coach a Manning. And he surely doesn't want to be the only coach that couldn't send a Manning on to the NFL who doesn't help turn him into a star. So, there's some PR, but I think, and that's important at a school like Texas. But I don't know. I don't think of it. Butch just tried to force silly stuff in there that just didn't work.
Like the turnover trash can? And
God. Big picture, please. And just all the, 63 strain.
The brick under the play, every player's seat when he first took over.
It was brick by brick. He wanted to give three great efforts in six. It really should have been 36 strain. Just a reminder, if he's taking a catchphrase course, he's barely getting out of that class. Because you would say three great efforts in a 6-second period, which of course is pretty much humanly impossible, but Butch wanted his players to be beyond human sometimes.
Yeah, there was on Twitter over the weekend, funny enough, it was a 420 joke, but it was like, what is a quote that seems so unrealistic you thought you were high when you first heard it? And one, and then the champions of life phrase came out and someone tweeted like, yes, a coach actually said they've won the championship of life, which is still like, I can't believe someone said that. I can't believe he said that.
Yeah, if Butch ever publishes his memoirs, the title of the book will be A Champion of Life. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Oh, absolutely. Contrasting Steve Sarkisian, though, with Josh Heupel and Nico Iamaliava, do you notice a difference in the sense of there's a lot of hype around Nico, but it doesn't seem like Josh Heupel's trying to push anything out there from a PR perspective on it, does it? It just seems like Nico just is that popular and that hyped up.
Yeah, but if you go back to before his freshman season, where he played barely enough to remind you he was on the team, in preseason, both Heupel and the offensive coordinator, Joey Halsley, both said, talked about how competent Nico was and how they wouldn't have any problem entrusting the offense to him. I really think, and you could say the same thing with, I think the reason Steve Sarkisian might feel compelled to trumpet the play of Manning more is because he's not going to be the starter. So you're going to go through two seasons without him being the starter. With Nico, it was just one season. And so both players got extraordinary publicity before they ever threw a pass in college. So they didn't need a lot of hype, but I think getting back to Sarkisian, and I think with this spring game, he wanted to remind everyone just what Arch Manning could be. And it worked beautifully. Arch Manning was up to the task. And now there are going to be a lot of, and there will be some people that will take it a notch higher and say, should Arch be the quarterback over Quinn Ewers? Because they will remember that last series against Washington in the playoff where those two passes in the end zone, he didn't really give his receivers a chance. And some people might think, yep, if Arch had been throwing those balls, we'd have won that game and been playing for a national championship.
Possibly, but they can't let Steve Sarkisian off the hook for misusing the clock, too, at the end of that game.
No, I know. But still, yeah. They were right there, and they needed, a really good pass, and Quinn Ewers is a really good quarterback, but he didn't deliver in those instances.
No, he didn't. I guess you probably believe, though, that you can justify Quinn Ewers starting over Arch Manning a lot more than you can justify Joe Milton starting over Nico Iamaliava. Is that fair to say?
Oh, there's no comparison. No. And see, then we get back to not just skill set. It's not as though Joe Milton didn't have talent, but his skill set fit a different style of offense than what Tennessee ran. And that's why it was kind of baffling to me the more I saw of Nico that he wasn't the quarterback by midseason. His skill set fits this offense to a T. I think even better than Hendon Hooker did. This is the guy to run this offense. And so it makes sense that Tennessee was all in on recruiting him. It recognized the talent. But I never quite understood why Josh Heupel looked at Joe Milton and said, well, this is a quarterback I have to have. I just didn't think it was a great fit.
I didn't either. But to be fair, because I've heard a lot of the fits with Milton, too, with Heupel, I think, again, and I said this last week, so I'll say it again, this is nothing on Milton's intelligence as a person. There's a difference between being smart and being able to think quickly. And some people just can't do that. And I don't think Milton is great at thinking quickly on his feet. And I think that's a problem wherever you play quarterback. And this as well as I do. Some NFL team's going to waste a draft pick on him because they're going to fall in love with his arm.
Sure. And also, though, to Milton's credit, he makes a good impression on people with his personality. he comes across as a really, I think, and he's genuinely a good team guy. I think he's not all about Joe Milton. So I think, so that will help him too. And you combine that with the arm. I mean, NFL types cannot resist the lure of that kind of arm. And they look at it like, well, we just tweak this, we do this, and he will thrive in our system. It doesn't usually work out. And what puzzles me about that whole idea is that the greatest NFL quarterbacks, most of them didn't have the greatest arm. They had good arms, but John Elway was the exception. Great quarterback, unbelievable arm. But most of the Aaron Rodgers is another one. But a lot of these guys, Joe Montana, didn't, and he was as good as anybody. So, yeah, it's funny how that works out. But I think he will get drafted. I just can't see him being a good NFL quarterback. And you bring up a good point. You know, there's so many different ways to measure intelligence, and football intelligence and just regular intelligence don't always coincide. You know, you think of somebody that might make straight A's, a 4-point average, might not fare well. His football IQ might not be nearly as high. He just may not. It's almost more than an intellectual pursuit. I look at it as a skill, almost, to be able to see things and then process things very quickly. It's hard to do, and I think Nico will be able to do that.
Oh, I do too. I think we watched that with the Iowa game. Nico was so he reacted so instinctually. Uh-huh. And some people thought that he ran too much. I didn't have a problem because you know this. Iowa plays that bare 4-2-5 defense, and they just beg you to work them down the field, basically. And he did that.
Yeah, it just looked as though he could find a crease in the defense and think, and he's doing this in fractions of a second. It's not like he's sitting there diagramming it on a sheet of paper. He sees what he can do, and he does it instinctively. And not that many players can do that. That's one reason I'm so high on him. I just look at him as a can't-miss talent. But that's one of the main reasons. It's not just that he's a good passer. His instinct for the game and knowing when to run, where to run, he's going to be fun to watch.
So they're not going to play each other for the next couple of years, I believe. But do you think that since they're in the SEC now, in SEC comparisons, we're entering a new era of where Arch and Sarkisian versus Nico and Heupel, this is basically Manning and Cutcliffe versus Warfel and Spurrier?
It could be, but I don't know what the schedule is like in when would they. They couldn't play before 26, right?
Yeah, so I don't think they're going to play each other because Arch.
I don't think it's going to happen. But that's an interesting comparison because Danny Werfel, of course, he played in the NFL, but he wasn't a great NFL talent, certainly. But he was a great college player. And again, we're talking about a player who was the perfect fit personality-wise and skill set-wise for what Steve Spurrier would try to do. I can still see Danny Werfel dropping back in an empty backfield, five wide out spread all over the field, Florida State, later Nebraska, and that didn't go well, just tearing him apart, knocking him down every third passing attempt. Didn't even phase Werfel. I mean, he would throw the ball very accurately, and he was just totally unfazed by a pass rush. He just stood there in the pocket and had no fear. And that was perfect for that system. He's reading the defense and he's looking at where he's going with the ball. And that was a perfect marriage of coach and player. And I thought Tennessee with David Cutcliffe, again, the offense was designed for Peyton, and Cutcliffe, like Spurry, was also a great quarterback's coach, not just a coordinator, but a really good quarterback's coach. So that's a really good example of how you can go about things differently and with different skill sets. neither, the thing they had in common, neither was a running threat. Neither Werfel nor Manning, but they were in different systems and different things were asked of them.
Right. And the only reason Florida had the upper hand is because at least one side was able to somewhat figure out the other offense, whereas Tennessee side could not figure out Steve Spurrier for the life of them. Could they?
No, that never happened.
Yes. And two, funny enough, because you brought up Nebraska a couple of times, to Florida's defense, and honestly to Tennessee's defense in this, John, I don't know if you're aware, but there were a lot of there's a lot of smoke surrounding the idea that Nebraska was maybe on some performance enhancers during that time. A lot of their players.
Well, and I will say, though, in fairness to Nebraska, when that dynasty began, Boyd Epley was a strength and conditioning coach, and he was ahead of his time. And so they were into strength and conditioning at a higher level than anybody else early on. And that laid the foundation. They're great offensive lines. But when you looked at Nebraska's offensive line and the style of play they ran, it wasn't as though they were just playing with brute force in the offensive line. Now, they put guys in the NFL, some really good players. But they also, those offensive linemen were skilled. They could run block so effectively, and they were really good at getting to people's legs and blocking it. Imagine, I mean, they ran the option, but they ran it with a lot better players than what Army or Air Force could do. And it was just a nightmare. And going back to when Tennessee played it in Peyton Manning's final college game, that was a nightmare for Tennessee's defense. I mean, they were totally dominated, but it wasn't because Nebraska was so much bigger and stronger. I saw it more as technique.
Oh yeah. The certain types of cut blocks and things they did with those.
Yeah.
And that's when Amon.
Yeah. Amon Green. Yeah. He had 1,000,000 yards in the second quarter. And I remember one of the Nebraska players talking, and this was a documentary on Tom Osborne. It was his last game. They knew it was a select group of people knew it was his last game, so they videotaped it. They did a documentary on him and the game itself. If you ever get a chance, I ordered one and watched it. It was fascinating because it took you inside Nebraska's game plan, and Tom Osborne was unbelievably candid. But they were interviewing Nebraska players. Keep in mind, this wasn't for public dissemination until after the game, but they were talking to one of the offensive linemen, and he said, we've heard the Tennessee players talking. We've played teams against like Nebraska before when they were asked about Nebraska's style of play. And they said, yeah, we've played against teams like that before. And then he said, they say that, but they haven't played anybody like us. And he was right.
Yeah. He was. That's very true. The two quirky offenses that Tennessee faced during that Manning senior year, Florida's and Nebraska's, and they couldn't figure them out.
You're right about John's appearance. Completely different styles. Yeah.
Yeah, completely different, but you're right. John's appearance brought to you by BetUS. In 15 seconds, we're going to talk a little bit about Tennessee's roster.
Favorite sportsbook and casino, live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer, a 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits, plus 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
So guys, John and I were talking last night, and we were setting up the show because Dave wasn't going to be on, and I was just trying to figure out some topics, and John brought up something interesting because we're all talking about Tennessee going for running backs or defensive backs in the portal. And John just dropped the thought in my head of why should they limit it to positions of need? Shouldn't they, even if it's a position of not need, shouldn't they still try to upgrade it in the portal? So John, I'm actually going to give the floor to you on this. You think, well, I'll just start with this question. Should Tennessee try to upgrade positions even that are not positions of need in the transfer portal?
Well, the more and more we see in the changes surrounding college football, we see it drifting toward the NFL model in every way. So when I look at the NFL, when you look at teams in the NFL draft, not everybody, you can't always, particularly in the first round, you can't always, you draft later in the first round, you can't necessarily fill a position of need. You got to say, can this guy really help us at this position of need? If not, you go for best player available. It's kind of a cliche. But I think in this era, you have to always look and you always compare. And you say, here's my top running back. And a guy is available in transfer portal. And you look at him, and do you think he's better? Then I try to get the guy that's better. Now, if there's a negative reaction to that, if that could have a negative impact, at least on maybe on team chemistry, on players already on the team, I just don't think in this era you can worry about that anymore. You have to get best players. And also, when I look at Tennessee's running back situation, Dylan Sampson certainly has tremendous potential. Maybe the younger guys do who haven't played as much too, Cam Seldon, those kind of guys. But if I see an elite running back, I know we downgraded the position quite a bit, both at the NFL and college letters. It seems to be all about the quarterbacks and even wide receivers more, but you get a really good running back, it can make a difference. So I'm always trying it. I would try it every position, even in a position – particularly two in the secondary. I mean, I know that's position of need with Tennessee, but if you see a cornerback out there, an elite cornerback, and you've already got two good cornerbacks, but you say, well, this guy's better than both of them, then you try to get that guy. That's how you, that to me is how you win a championship.
Here's where this could be a little concerning, because on principle, I agree with you. In the NFL model, you're right. You do that in the NFL, but you do have players locked in on contracts on the NFL. So what if you're Tennessee and you're looking for a new receiver in the portal and word gets to Brew McCoy that you're looking for another receiver, and Brew McCoy says, hey, they said I'm supposed to be the number one receiver and they're going for somebody else. I'm out of here. And then he leaves, and then you don't land a receiver in the portal. Then you just lost one of your go-to receivers from this. Is it worth that risk?
Well, this is not something I would put on a billboard or disseminate on social media, that we need to get another receiver if I were Tennessee. I think, though, you've obviously got to be sure you can get him. That's a fine line there. But to me, if a player, just because a player hears, oh, Tennessee's looking at a high statewide receiver, well, Brew McCoy is still making a lot of money, and he knows this system. It's not as though he's going to lose his starting position. He won't be the guy that you lose. If you're getting a Marvin Harrison Jr., you got a shot at him, yeah, I would take that risk.
Yeah, it's the old don't go for need, go for best player. I mean, you've covered SEC sports a long time, so you probably remember, don't you, John, when Sam Bowie was taking over Michael Jordan, the Kentucky Ford, in the 84 draft. And
yeah,
Portland's thought was, well, we have a guard in Clyde Drexler, so we just need a big now.
I just think talent always wins the day. And if you can get a guy more talented. And in fact, we didn't know Michael Jordan would be what he became. We didn't really see that Michael Jordan. And I was covering the Final Four when he hit the game-winning shot against Georgetown. We saw a really good player, but we didn't think we were seeing maybe the best to ever play the game. And he became that. But I just do. I think in a lot of positions, I would look at that way, even in the offensive line. I mean, you've got veterans coming back, but if I see a guy that you got an all-SEC lineman out there that wants to play in your system and you can afford him with your NIL package, maybe he's not making enough somewhere else. Get a lot of injuries in that O-line. Why not go for him? I don't know at this stage of the game, for example, an offensive lineman would say, well, I'm out of here. They got somebody that's even better than I am. they're not satisfied with me. I don't know that they're looking, and you know how it is in the offensive line. Players play different positions. You can move one guy to tackle, move to guard, maybe even a center, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I just think in the pursuit of championships, in this NIL era, you will have to take chances. Let's go back to the first portal opening with football. Evan Stewart, Texas A&M wide receiver. He enters the portal. Clearly a high-level talent. And we hear all these different schools are pursuing him. Why wouldn't Tennessee? Then I hear none of this is factually based. It's just what you hear. Oh, this guy might be kind of a head case. This guy might be difficult. All that kind of stuff, which often is because those rumors get started because teams know they can't get them and they have to answer why. I'm not saying whatever the case is, but there are plenty of great wide receivers who had, let's say, distinct personalities. And I imagined him in Tennessee's system. And I know there are guys faster than he is, but he's pretty fast. And he's one of those guys that can just make plays. And I envisioned him in Tennessee's system. So if I could have gotten that guy, if I had the NIL money to get him, I would have really gone all in on him. He goes out to Oregon. Even after Tennessee's offensive group seemed to be set, they're solid. But see, you think about a championship and you think about those playoff games where the games are often determined by a great player making a great play. And oftentimes it's at quarterback. But we see it. We've seen it through the years at other positions, too, at running back and receiver. If you can get a guy like that, I would be willing to take a chance.
Here's one way I think I'm going to cut into that thought, which is this. It's Michigan winning the national title this past year. I don't know if you're familiar with, they had an NIL campaign last year called Those Who Stay. And the whole focus was, we're going to spend our NIL money to get everybody to come back and rely on it. I think they kind of resigned themselves to the idea that they'll never be able to get the talent that Ohio State, Georgia, and Alabama can get. And Harbaugh and them resigned themselves to the idea that we can get close enough, but then outweigh them with experience and chemistry with the players that are still on their team. And honestly, John, I think that worked, because that Alabama-Michigan game, I watched that game, and I'm sorry, Alabama had more talent all over the field. I think Michigan was just that much more disciplined than Alabama was because they played together for so long.
Yeah, that's a factor. And ideally, you want both. Sound pretty greedy, but ideally, you want both. But I think in this era, doing what Michigan did and keeping players and sticking with them in that system, I think it's going to be very hard. It's going to be harder and harder to do that. I think Michigan is going to be the exception in that regard. I think Ohio State is the way to go. I think if you can get the very best players, I mean, it took Caleb Downs from Alabama, a defensive back. You do enough of that, to me, you eventually win, or you find a coach that can win those kind of games. So, yeah, I just think those virtues will be harder to maintain in this era. I really do. But I give all the credit to Michigan. You're right. Well-oiled machine, you know, a lot of good players, but they played together well, and you're so, so true. Didn't make the kind of mistakes that Alabama made.
Right. And it's funny you bring up Ohio State, because I'm sure, as you've noticed, they are opening their checkbook to win it this year. And it feels like they're kind of saying, Ryan Day, you better win it for us this year or we're moving on.
And that's what we're going to have. I think throughout college football, if you have an NIL program that's championship worthy, then your coach better be championship worthy. Because if they see they're investing all this money and he can't deliver the championship, what's the point? Why am I spending all this money if he's not going to deliver a championship? We need to find someone who can. And I think certainly Ryan Day isn't on the hot seat, but he can't continue to fall short. Not against Ohio, not against Michigan, and not in the playoff. Because people, we look what his quarterback did as a rookie, and he came tantalizingly close, I know, to beating Georgia, but he didn't. And so people said, well, he couldn't win with KJ Stroud. I mean, how can we expect him to win? And so then that's when you make a change.
And this is a perfect segue. We're going to take a 2-minute break, guys. When we come back, we are going to talk NIL because FedEx and the U of M have launched an NIL partnership that I think could affect Tennessee and send ripples to college football because it's the first of its kind. Stick with us. We're going to talk about it in 2 minutes.
Mustang 5.0 GT, 33,540, 2021 GMC, Sierra 1500 Denali 4x4, 46,980, 2022 Ford Expedition, King Ranch 4x4, 67,550. Ray Varner Ford, your East Tennessee Ford dealership.
Sports Treasures in North Knoxville is one of the South's largest sports cards and memorabilia dealers, featuring over 10 million sports cards from vintage to modern. Sports Treasures carries a full line of hobby boxes, singles, autographed memorabilia, Tennessee Vol collectibles, fan cave decorations, and so much more. See a museum full of collectibles at Sports Treasures, 4819 North Broadway in Fountain City, and Sports Treasures on Facebook. Sports Treasures, where the real sports fan goes to shop.
Have you seen the latest TriStar Hats Co. product?
TriStar Hats Co.? What's that?
You know, those really cool hats, shirts, tumblers, and even license plates with 3 stars like the official Tennessee flag and stripes like the American flag. Pretty patriotic, if you ask me.
Ah, gotcha. Seen those. Those are cool. Where can I get them?
Simple. TriStarHatsCo.com. And if you order now, there's 10% on any order $50 or more. Plus, use the promo code HOOKED.
With the promo code HOOKED, you get 10% off. That's HOOKED.
And don't forget free shipping with any order over $50. Stock up at TriStarHatsCo.com. That's TriStarHatsCo.com. There are plenty of wannabes out there, so make sure you go to TriStarHatsCo.com for the best quality and customer service.
Will do, and I'll be sure to use the promo code HOOKED. That's HOOKED when I do to save an additional 10% off. TriStarHatsCo.com.
TriStar Hats Co. is a trademark of TriStar Hats Co. LLC. Any use without express written consent is prohibited.
Now in its 45th year, the second and third generations continue Joe Neubert's commitment.
His vision of what this business needed to be, we still try to live up to that.
Joe Neubert Collision Center.
Welcome back to Off the Hook Sports. Caleb Calhoun and John Adams here. Please hit that like and subscribe button. Dave Hooker will be back tomorrow taking a well-deserved break. Wanted to talk a little more NIL. On the other side of the state of Tennessee, FedEx has announced a $25 million NIL investment in Memphis that will fund $5 million in NIL contracts over each of the next 5 years in key sports. For those who don't know, the Memphis Tigers have been fighting for years to try to get into a Power 5 conference. Things that have held them back have been horrendous athletic directors, historically, one by the name of R.C. Johnson, who said that Memphis football should be able to recruit because they have a nice airport. I kid you not, he once said that. But this is the first of its kind with a corporation directly tying itself to a university. So I want to talk about this in a couple of ways. But John, I guess we should start with how much of a trend is this? Is this going to become a new thing where major corporations will just start a partnership with the university, or do you think this is unique to the U of M?
It's hard to say at this juncture. I mean, we have their big money boosters tied to various schools who also own corporations. So yeah, that's possible. It was just interesting the way it came about. I thought that, you know, it struck me because we don't think of Memphis as an elite football program. And so I think it was very significant for Memphis. And I think it helps. It has a lot to overcome facilities, certainly, in Power Five leagues and getting in the Big 12. But I mean, that helps to me. I think as we get further and further in this era, when you can say, yeah, our stadium only seats 35,000 people, but we can spend $30 million a year in NIL. Well, I don't know how much you care about. They can be competitive. It doesn't matter about this so much about the size of the stadium. So, yeah, I think it's significant. How much will it still? $5 million a year is not a lot. And you're spreading that around to various programs. I've kind of heard always since it started, $25 to $30 million a year in NIL money for football. That's what it's going to take to fund a championship program. And I don't think Memphis can do that. Not all SEC schools can do it either. A lot of schools can't do it, but there's some that can, and those are the schools that will have the NIL capability of competing for championships.
Here is where I agree, and here's where you won't see this at other schools, because the U of M is very desperate to try to get to that Power Five level, so they're willing to make this deal. I think Tennessee has isn't it the Dish Network guy, Pilot? You know, Tennessee has a few major corporations for people with boosters who support Tennessee. The problem with making an agreement like this is you've essentially turned the fate of your program over to a corporation that wants to do whatever it wants to do with itself. And I mean, could you imagine, just to throw a name out, I pick on him a lot, but could you imagine if Tennessee did that and let Jimmy Haslam, you know, have this NIL sponsorship? Jimmy Haslam would effectively be the owner of Tennessee, and talk about how bad the program could get at that point. I think that's the dangerous part. You don't want to turn over. Your whole program is at that point dependent on the generosity of a corporation, one corporation.
Yeah, it's you have to feel pretty good about the core leadership of the corporation. But you mentioned desperation with Memphis wanting to be in a Power Five conference. So you're going to do what it takes to get there. Then maybe you have to strike another deal, or then maybe you have to deal with different things and change things up. But getting there, I mean, I was a columnist in Jacksonville, Florida, before there were the Jaguars. And the city was obsessed with an NFL franchise, obsessed with it for many, many years. And it finally got one. But you talk about desperate, it would pretty much have done anything the NFL would have asked. So getting there is the goal. Worry about staying there later, or what the one loss record is, or how it all plays out. that would be secondary at this point, because getting there is the goal.
Yeah, that's kind of the philosophy, isn't it? Because, and you probably remember this, a lot of people don't, but Memphis was parallels with Louisville and Cincinnati back in the day. And sure. Louisville and Cincinnati did everything they could to get into Power Five leagues, and were making those moves as early as, what, 1990 with Louisville.
I think, too, I wonder it with Memphis, because Memphis has such a great tradition in college basketball. And I remember covering, other than Rupp Arena, I think the best atmosphere of regular season basketball I've ever seen was there in Memphis when Tennessee played there, and Bruce Pearl's team. Yeah. That was just an unbelievable atmosphere. It was really like a Final Four game, and the atmosphere was. So, yeah, just a great setting. So I wonder, you said this is going to be all sports. So I wonder how much of that money is going into basketball, because really when we talk about Power Five leagues and we talk about, you know, network deals and all, pretty much talking about football. And if I'm Memphis with its tradition in basketball, I wonder how much of that money would go to the basketball program.
Well, that's actually so back when the R.C. Johnson days, it would have all gone to basketball. I'm sure you remember when Larry Finch coached Memphis, they don't he kind of set a standard where you don't really have to you don't have to put too much into the basketball program, because you can just wake up and get a top 10 class with Memphis kids a lot of times, kids from there.
Sure.
So the new athletic department directors over the past 10 years have been focusing more on football, which was another area where I was going. Memphis is never going to be on Tennessee's level, guys, in football. Ever, ever. It's not happening. It will never happen. However, part of Tennessee's success over the years has been plucking two or three elite players out of the West Tennessee area. And, you know, the 98 team, obviously Al Wilson was from Jackson, but Cedric Wilson was right out of Memphis. And, you know, one or two players like that. John, if Memphis were to get Power Five tier, would that be a concern for Tennessee, who does want to pluck your Amari Thomases out of Memphis every now and then? People like that.
I don't think it is a great concern, because in this era with NIL, I just think it's all about the money. I really do. I think you're competing with everybody. And if you have a really vibrant NIL program, you're going to be successful. It doesn't matter where you are. I mean, if Memphis can outbid Tennessee, if there's an elite quarterback in Memphis, a five-star quarterback, if Memphis has the NIL resources, that could matter. But I don't know, and it might help some to be in a Big 12. Sure. Yeah, it could help some. But I don't see Memphis being able to compete with Tennessee long-term NIL-wise. I just don't.
Well, what if it's a situation of Tennessee wants this kid out of Memphis, but, you know, they're putting all their NIL money elsewhere because they're trying to build a title team. So they may not, you know, Memphis might say, oh, we're going to go all in on this one, keeping this one kid in Memphis, whereas Tennessee is not going to go all in.
Yeah. Well, then, yeah, it could be a factor, because.
Right.
But Memphis would need that edge of being in a Power Five conference. So then combine that it's going all in money wise, and then it also is in the Big 12 now. That would be a plus. So yeah, it could be a factor in that case. But I just don't think now with NIL, I mean, you see it especially with transfers, going after elite transfers. Do you think geography matters much to any of these guys? Are they just so focused on the money now? That's the feeling I get, that they're so focused on the money, and maybe to their detriment. Maybe they should consider other factors more, but I just think it's about the money now.
I think if there's competitive offers across the board, like John, I know you're from Louisiana. I don't think LSU's ever going to fall behind because of NIL. Now, LSU's actually pretty good in the NIL market, but I'm saying I don't think they would ever fall behind, because I feel like even in this era, I feel like so many elite kids from Louisiana want to stay in Louisiana and play football for LSU. And I still think LSU could hire Ed Orgeron and go win a national championship because he woke up one day and got a number one recruiting class of Louisiana kids.
Yeah, that helps. But also, and you did say this, LSU's right near the top of the heap in NIL money in pretty much every sport. So you combine the two. If the money's all equal, then why not stay close to home if you're happy where you live? Some kids do want to get away, experience something different. They want to get away from their home environment. But you're right. Now, it didn't used to be the case. LSU didn't used to always corner. It used to struggle in New Orleans, and New Orleans produced some really good football players, and LSU didn't always get them. But ever since Nick Saban went there, that kind of changed things, and it stayed that way, where you see, and you can put together a team like Ed Orgeron had, where you have two probably future pro Hall of Fame wide receivers and a quarterback all on the same depth chart.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's funny. I did my breakdown of Nick Saban. I think what helped Nick Saban was right before he got there, Mark Emmert became president of LSU. And I guess Mark Emmert was one who just decided maybe we should put just a little bit into the program and make it be good. And
they did.
Yeah. when in 60 seconds, the show brought to you by Dynasty Pools and Spas. In 60 seconds, we're going to close out the show talking a little bit about some new NCAA rules because John has an interesting take on that, too. The show brought to you by Dynasty Pools and Spas.
You know, the best thing about Dynasty Pools and Spas is that they've got it all taken care of. What does that mean? Well, you stop by their showroom and check out their fantastic selection of top-notch spas in that showroom in Athens. Make your pick and get ready, because Dynasty Pools and Spas delivers within 125 miles of that location in Athens, that fantastic showroom. They've got the cover lifts, steps, chemicals, and everything you need. Delivery at no extra charge. Just down the road in Athens. You pick the spa you want, and it'll be there for you. Oftentimes discounted with military and first responders discounts. Also blemish models, or just mention Off the Hook Sports. That's Off the Hook Sports for $500 off. There's a discount for you on spas made right here in East Tennessee. Support local. Dynasty Pools and Spas also has the best chemicals for you and your spa and your pool. No fillers, just the chemicals. Made right here in East Tennessee. Support local Dynasty Pools and Spas, $500 off if you mention Off the Hook Sports, $500 off if you mention Off the Hook Sports, Dynasty Pools and Spas, DynastyPoolsandSpas.com.
Rules changes coming to college football. The NCAA has approved a two-minute warning, and they have also approved helmet communications. Now, John, according to the NCAA, this two-minute warning won't involve an extra commercial break. Do you or does anybody believe that in the world?
It'll be a two-minute commercial break. That's what it is. There's a two-minute for a reason. Yeah, why even say that?
Yeah, and I want to know your thoughts on this because, and we'll get to the helmet communication because, believe it or not, I think that's, you think Tennessee's offense was fun before you allow Josh Heupel to communicate with the quarterback's helmet. And I think you might see some crazy stats offensively for Tennessee going forward. But as far as a 2-minute warning goes, is college football going to have a problem where they are just taking up, do they even care that they're taking up too much of someone's Saturday? Because it's already a 3.5-hour game, which is half an hour longer than an NFL game. Now you're adding the two-minute warning. I mean, you're going to have to start setting aside 4 hours for college football games now, right?
Well, it's also contradictory to what the NCAA just did, where they originally you stopped the clock on first downs, and they eliminated that with the express intent to shorten the game. And of course, for the last 2 minutes, you can stop the clock on first downs, but that was a big step. But now they're going back the other way. And I can't help but believe that this is a commercial-driven decision. What else would it be? Or are they just trying to say, we want to be NFL light? We want to be this. It's just another melding of pro football with college football, and it's all become pro football in just two different levels.
But have they not paid attention to the lack of interest that there is in minor league baseball nowadays to realize that you shouldn't just make yourself pro football light? I mean, this is a very short-sighted decision with them doing this.
No, but see, here's the thing, Caleb. I prefer watching college football game to a pro game. And I think a lot of people do. So I don't think this will affect the popularity of the sport whatsoever. It used to be one of the reasons NFL has been universally popular through all these years was betting. It's the best game to bet on. It's just really attractive to bettors. You only have 32 or so teams. You can have a reasonable working knowledge. People fool themselves into believing they know more about a team when, in effect, once the line, in fact, when the line is set, that tells you what the research goes into that betting line. So then it's kind of flipping a coin. Rare instances you have inside information. But so you have the prevalence of gambling, but what's happened now, gambling is more prevalent than ever. And so people are doing, in Knoxville, for example, it's a big college town. And so, I mean, I know so many more people that bet on games now than they used to. So I think that will enhance the popularity of the sport. I just think college football is so entertaining that it doesn't matter. These changes don't affect it enough to alter the viewing. I had an email, and I get these occasionally, from somebody who says they've been priced out of the ticket market, and they have season tickets. Say football became too expensive, basketball became too expensive, and finally now baseball has become too expensive for them. But there are going to be other people that will buy those tickets. And ticket sales don't have the same impact they once did because of these gigantic network deals, television games. So I just think, yeah, you can say it's getting so much like the NFL, but I still find it more exciting than the NFL. I mean, we talked about this yesterday, but the NFL, to me, most of those games come down to a field goal. Can you get in position to field, kick a field goal? And all the guys can kick it 57, 58 yards now and hit 85% of them, or they get cut. So you kind of know more how the game's going to go. I think there's more of a surprise element with college football. And then you have the benefit of outlandish scores in college football, which to me is attractive to the bettor, because you can say, are they going to beat that team 50 points? And look, they're only giving 47. I'm making that bet. So I just think, and I like the communication thing when you brought that up. I mean, yeah, that's an advantage for really good offensive-minded coaches like Josh Heupel. Oh, my gosh, if Steve Spurrier would have been able to do that, he might have won the national championships, really. I think he might have, just with that
rule. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was why he did that, because he did it against Tennessee in 98 and against Florida State in 97, where he rotated quarterbacks every other play, right? And that was so he could tell them the play before they went out there.
I remember one time I was covering a game. I would go down a week before and advance the Tennessee-Florida game. And Tennessee had an open date, and Florida was playing someone like Louisiana Monroe. And during the game, I think Jesse Palmer might have been the quarterback. And they ran a play, threw an incompletion, and he pulls Jesse Palmer and brings in Rex Grossman, a freshman. And I talked about that to Rex Grossman in the locker room. He said Spurrier came over to him after Jesse Palmer hadn't seen the open receiver in the end zone. And he said, okay, we're going to do this, and the receiver's going to go here. Can you throw him the ball in the end zone? He said, yeah, coach. And he did. And it was a touchdown. So to him, it was all about, can these quarterbacks follow Steve Spurrier's? Spurrier sees the field so well. He saw the field so well, rather. And he saw matchups so well that if I get this guy receiver on that defensive back, we're going to win that. The quarterback just has to throw him the ball. So you're communicating in his ear now. Jesse, throw the ball to number 11. He'll be standing there in the end zone, okay? Been hard to beat. And I think Heupel would be really good at that too.
Oh, I think so too. I mean, he was a former quarterback that was great too.
Sure.
All-American who saw the field. And I mean, now you got Heupel can see it from the sideline. Nico can see it at the line of scrimmage. I mean, this is going to be very unfair for a lot of teams, but I think this is crazy to say, but I think Tennessee might, you know, everybody talks Colorado or this, or I think Tennessee might be the most covered team in college football the next 2 years, because I think they're just going to be the most fun team to watch with the most fun quarterback to watch.
Well, that was the case in 22. I think when you're looking over a spate of college football games on a Saturday and you're an average fan in anywhere America, and you say, well, who do I want to watch in this time slot? You have no particular rooting interest. There might not be a number one versus number two matchup. Who do you want to watch? You'd say, well, Tennessee. I mean, They're so much fun to watch. They move the ball so quickly. They score so much, pile up so many yards. You might see a 70-point game. I think Tennessee could be that attraction. And, again, we get back to where we were talking earlier about how do you fit an offense with your quarterback. This is such a natural pairing with Nico in this offense. And I do think Nico will draw television viewers. I mean, if they've never seen him before and if they saw him in the bowl game, they can kind of get their interest piqued. But they look at him at what he can do. And keep in mind, he's so unusual and he's 6'6". We're not talking about a 6'2" guy doing what he can do. He's so shifty and he's 6'6". You watch him play and he doesn't look like he's 6'6".
Yeah, there's a comparison I draw, and I say this a lot. We mentioned Worfel and Spurrier earlier. I go Worfel, Spurrier, Tommy Frazier, Tom Osborne, and Tim Tebow, Urban Meyer are my list of like quarterbacks. If you could create a quarterback in a lab to run the offense that they played in, they were created in a lab. I think Nico might be on that list for Josh Heupel.
Yeah, and see, because he's distinctive, and think about the Tebow factor. I mean, just an incredible college quarterback, but so much fun to watch. To watch a quarterback get in the open field and lower his shoulder and knock a safety into next week or even a linebacker. I mean, you wanted to watch him play. And I think it's going to be the same way with Nico. He's going to be so distinctive. People are going to say, man, I got to check this guy out.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that's exactly how that's going to happen. John, thanks so much for coming in today while you're in Louisiana. That was clutch of you to do with Dave off. I really appreciate it.
Sure thing. Enjoyed it, Cable. Caleb.
Thanks. Guys, Dave will be back tomorrow. Please hit the like and subscribe button. For John Adams and Caleb Calhoun, this has been a presentation of Off the Hook Sports.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.